We now bring to this microphone David James. David and I have a weekly conversation. We're going to focus on the Supreme Court ruling which struck down the Louisiana abortion law. We'll get into that in a moment. We have a Q&A time before we get to our main issue, and we're so glad to have David along. We have this conversation for the purpose of helping the body of Christ come to a better understanding on issues that we focus on as it relates to a biblical perspective and a prophetic perspective as well. David, last week, the last several weeks, we've started off our segment with a listener's question that is certainly relevant, especially in this election year, and let's do that this time as well.
Sure, be glad to. Well, this listener's question was apparently because we're in an election year, and I've edited his question for some clarity. He says this: there should never be a time in the true Christian's life, never a moment, when he says, let me choose the lesser of two evils. It just shouldn't happen. But that being said, if we have a choice between a bad person and a much worst person, what's a Christian supposed to do? And he says, don't get me wrong, I love this country and the principles it stands for, but my hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and his righteousness. Now, we certainly appreciate the email, Jimmy, and we would both agree with what he said at the end. We both love our country, and we both put our hope in our Lord and not in any politician or any political party or any political system. And, you know, by God's grace, we live in a country in which we do have some influence in selecting our leaders, and as citizens of this country, we are the government. And when it comes to elections, you know, it's always a choice between the lesser of two evils, even when there are two candidates that we think are relatively good people, because the fact is we're all sinners. And no one is as good as they seem to be, and many are far worse than they seem to be, and some we know how bad they are up front, and some we find out the hard way after the fact. But, Jimmy, if we refuse to vote for anyone, then we're giving at least half a vote to the greater of two evils just by doing nothing. So I would disagree with those who say that we just aren't going to vote.
David, 2 weeks ago, we dealt with the 5-4 Supreme Court decision that has many concerned because of how it interpreted part of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to give protection to those who identify as other than their birth gender. And this week, they struck down a Louisiana law that provided reasonable restrictions to getting an abortion in that particular state. Give us some details.
Sure. Well, you know, Jimmy, many have been very happy that President Trump has already been able to appoint two justices to the Supreme Court, Brian Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, which is amazing for a first-term president. And Donald Trump has appointed and the Senate has confirmed 197 federal judges through June of this year, just his fourth year in office. You know, the average number of federal judges appointed by a president through June 1st of their fourth year is about 176. So going back to the Supreme Court, there have been some serious health concerns with Ruth Bader Ginsburg over the last couple of days. I even saw headlines concerning Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito thinking about retiring before long. But these two recent SCOTUS rulings have been serious blows to the president's agenda because it's a blow to his conservative base, and both of these rulings have potential broad implications. The majority opinion from a couple of weeks ago resulted from Justice Gorsuch applying a literalistic view of the word sex such that its meaning could evolve to today to include sexual identity in today's world, something it was never intended to mean. And now in this ruling that we're talking about today, with a 5-4 justice split, the Supreme Court deemed unconstitutional a Louisiana law that would have drastically restricted abortion access by requiring abortion doctors having access to a nearby hospital.
David, I would like to dig deeper into this week's ruling because this seems to represent a substantial victory for the abortion rights activists.
Right. Well, the president and CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights, a lady named Nancy Northrup, is quoted as saying, "We are just delighted. It's a great victory in Louisiana." So this Supreme Court ruling involved a 2014 Louisiana law that would have required all abortion providers to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. And to me, Jimmy, this just seemed like common sense. But abortion activists claim that abortion is an extremely safe procedure and rarely requires hospitalization. And so because of this, doctors who provide abortions don't tend to seek such admitting privileges, with detractors saying that granting privileges is a bureaucratic process, and physicians can be denied for any number of reasons, including if they don't regularly admit patients to the hospital. And apparently in Louisiana, they can be denied precisely because they perform abortions. Now, as it turns out, Louisiana's law was identical or almost identical to an earlier Texas law that led to closing half of Texas abortion clinic, which supporters of the Louisiana law had cited on the way to passing their own law. But in 2016, the Supreme Court struck down the Texas law, ruling that it had no health or safety benefit for women and provided an unconstitutional burden on abortion access.
So then, David, can we go deeper into the thinking that went into the majority and the dissenting opinions given by the Supreme Court justices? What the logic was behind these decisions?
Well, Justice Stephen Breyer wrote the majority decision, as he had for the Texas case, and he concluded that the laws were nearly identical and that the evidence against the Louisiana law was even stronger and more detailed, and then he argued that there would only be one abortion provider for the 10,000 women wanting an abortion in Louisiana each year, and because of the long distances involved, it would disproportionately affect poor women. And according to Kathleen Pittman, who is the administrator of Shreveport's Hope Medical Group for Women, said that most of the clinic's patients already have one or more children at home, and 75% are poor or low income. However, the dissenting judges, and that would be Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Brian Kavanaugh, they each wrote separate dissents. Alito held that the Louisiana law would protect women and also argued that the doctors who brought the suit had a conflict of interest because it would benefit them but not the women that it was supposed to protect. And this would mean that the doctors shouldn't even have legal standing to bring the case to the Supreme Court. And then Thomas wrote, "Today a majority of the court perpetuates its ill-founded abortion jurisprudence by enjoining a perfectly legitimate state law and doing so without jurisdiction." And this was the view of all the dissenting justices, Jimmy. And then, once again, Justice Roberts was the swing vote, and basically his argument was that since the Texas law had already been struck down, there was legal precedent requiring that the Louisiana law be struck down because they were essentially the same.
David, I want to mention another Supreme Court ruling that came down this week as well, since we want to be fair and balanced in the situation. And this ruling would actually support school choice, which I think is key. It's been that way for a number of years. It's that way for almost everybody across the United States. Talk to us about that.
Well, you're right. U.S. News and World Report carried an article this week that began with, and I'll quote, "The Supreme Court ruled Texas that Montana's state constitution discriminated against religious schools when it barred families from using a tax credit scholarship to enroll children in those schools, a major victory for the Trump administration's school choice agenda and one that could have seismic implications for dozens of other states with similar prohibitions in their constitutions." And Jimmy, this was also a split decision, with Chief Justice Roberts writing the following in the majority, "Drawing on enduring American tradition, we have long recognized the rights of parents to direct the religious upbringing of their children." And then he went on to say, "Many parents exercise their right by sending their children to religious schools, a choice protected by the Constitution, but the no-aid provision penalizes that decision by cutting families off from otherwise available benefits if they choose a religious private school rather than a secular one, and for no other reason. So, Jimmy, the bottom line is that the lead plaintiff gained a win because the Supreme Court concluded that barring aid to religious schools on the basis of the no-aid language in Montana's state constitution discriminated against religious schools and the families whose children attend or hope to attend those schools. And the lead plaintiff and two other mothers challenged the state's ruling under the U.S. Constitution's guarantees of free exercise of religion and equal protection. And, you know, the court's ruling was immediately criticized by teachers unions who see the creep of school choice into the system, and especially that of private school choice being a direct threat to public school funding.
I hope we have not gone too deep into some of these things, but I think it's essential that David bring this information to our attention so we can understand how this is all working out and why maybe these Supreme Court justices are making the decisions they are. I think as we wrap it up for today, we ought to circle back around to our listeners' election question. And David, really, don't issues like this mean that it's more than just about the man or the woman who we may be voting for president? For example, it's also about his Supreme Court appointees, and that will have a lasting impact long after that individual as president has left office.
Well, that's really interesting, and it brings up a couple of interesting issues for conservative Bible believers. The first is the matter of originalist constitutional jurisprudence, which simply means that Supreme Court justices who are guided by the philosophy that the Constitution is a fixed historical guide for legislation and judicial decisions. And, you know, that's different than seeing it as a living document whose meaning changes with the times and so must be continually reinterpreted by every generation as a society or culture or ethics and morality morph and change. We say we don't want legislating from the bench, but that can be a two-edged sword because we tend to think decisions are faithful to the Constitution when we as conservatives agree, but that they're legislating from the bench when we disagree. And also, when we talk about conservative president appointing federal or Supreme Court justices to the bench, what we're really hoping for is that their thumbs will be on the conservative side of the scale of justice, which really shouldn't be happening. And in other words, we're hoping for a conservative biblical standpoint. But let's consider this, and this is kind of astounding as we wrap up. In the last 50 years, since Richard Nixon in 1968, there have been six Republican presidents serving 28 years and have appointed 15 Supreme Court justices and nearly 1,400 federal judges. The Democrats have had half that many presidents in 20 years and appointed only four judges. And yet, Jimmy, we are where we are, which tells me that the creep of society at every level is away from biblical principles, no matter who we put into office. And this isn't going to end, and it's not going to be solved by politicians.
Well, that's some very thought-provoking statements that you just made, David. And I think we as Christians must consider your comments in this last answer to my last question. Thank you so very much for doing the research and appreciate the opportunity to focus on this Supreme Court activity, the decisions they're making. David, appreciate it. We'll have another conversation next week.
I'll look forward to it, Jimmy. Thank you.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll take a look at the book. It's all ahead right here on Prophecy Today.